Peter Wright Public Library is hosting Book Notes tonight at 7. It's an author talk with John Smolens and Karen Dion. Welcome to you both.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Hans.
The author talk, John, if we could just... that sounds like such a terrific event, having two writers keeping each other, you know, honest.
This is the third summer that I've done a program of this nature, and it's just been an awful lot of fun. And the turnout each year has been just fabulous. I would stress, though, that this event is in the Shiras room upstairs.
Right.
Sometimes it's down in the community room in the basement, but it's going to be in the Shiras room. Karen and I will have a conversation for half an hour or so, and then I'll turn things over to let people in the audience ask her questions. And there will be books available from Snowbound Books, so people can meet her, talk with her, you know, buy a book, she'll sign it. So it's usually a great event.
Yeah.
And there'll be cookies and things to eat, too.
Now, Karen Dion is a Michigan author who lived in the UP for a few years back in the 70s, and her book is called The Marsh King's Daughter. And Karen, welcome to Marquette and to Public Radio 90.
I'm super excited to be here. The Marsh King's Daughter has been published in a lot of languages, and so mm-hmm. I've traveled all over the country and even to the UK and Norway to talk to readers about the book. But I love talking to Michigan authors, and especially here in the UP, because these readers get the book in a way that, you know, foreigners do not.
Right, and the book is set here in the UP.
That's right.
And there's a connection to when you lived here in the 70s, you and your husband actually, as we would call it today, lived off the grid in a sense, and that's what happens in the book.
That's right. During the 1970s, my husband and I moved with our infant daughter to a piece of property. We purchased it right on M28. Because my husband was a stoneware potter at the time, and we thought we would open a little pottery studio and catch the tourists going by. But for that first summer, we lived in a tent, and we built a little cabin. Our daughter was 6 weeks old at the time.
My goodness.
Yes.
Not like you had anything else to do.
I know. I look back on it, and I think, you know, were we crazy?
Yes.
I think so. But, you know, that's almost a prerequisite to moving to the Upper Peninsula. Yeah, so I drew heavily on those experiences to write The Marsh King's Daughter, because in The Marsh King's Daughter, this is a family that lives entirely off the grid. For the characters, the first 12 years of her life, she lives with her mother and father in a cabin on a ridge surrounded by marsh or swamp in the Taquamen River Valley.
Right. And calling them a family, I think, is kind of a generous name.
Yes.
This is actually a kidnapper.
That's
who
right.
creates his own little world by stealing a young girl, and then they have a child.
Right, right. And so Helena, who's the main character of the story, for those first 12 years, she has no idea that there's anything wrong with her family. Mm-hmm. She never sees any other people. I gave her a stack of National Geographic magazines.
I love that.
Yes.
This is her world.
Right.
The Yanomamo.
Yes. They're old, you know, but we all know every cabin in Michigan has a stack of National Geos, right?
Yeah.
And I wanted her to be able to learn to read and know a little bit about the outside world. But aside from that, her interactions with her mother and father are all she knows. She never sees another person in those 12 years. But she loves her life. She loves her father. She loves hunting and fishing and foraging. And so as far as she's concerned, that life is completely normal.
Well, in a way, to me, the story struck me as all of our experiences growing up. What she's doing is growing up. And she's bonded terrifically with her father because he spends time with her. He mm-hmm. teaches her how to fish. He teaches her all of these things that I think a lot of us would like to learn because they're survival skills.
That's right.
And he teaches her even, and this is kind of dark. We'll introduce the dark aspect now, where he teaches her how to hunt him.
Yes, yes.
And that's quite chilling because of the situation he's put her in, and it's almost like, he's a very smart man, but how really smart is he? Because has he understood that his child will become an adolescent, will suddenly want to go out, learn more about the world than National Geographic?
That's right.
And the mother's part really is she cooks and cleans and gets beat up.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. The mother is a very tragic figure in the mm-hmm. story. In reality, when a young girl has a child in captivity, you know, there's been a few, Amanda Berry and J.C. DeGard. The truth is they bond with the child. The child is like their salvation in this horrible mm-hmm. circumstance that they're in. But I was creating a story. I wanted I had to manipulate the circumstances to where Helena did not bond with her mother, and her mother was, you know, very cowed and very beaten, because I wanted this strong relationship with the father to be central to the story. So, you know, in Helena's progression in the book in those early years, she loves her father unconditionally. You might even say she loves her father more than any child has ever loved their father, because there are no other adults in her life. There's no grandparents. There's no teachers. There's only that relationship, even though it's a twisted relationship. But then when she leaves the marsh, and I'm not giving too much away, all of this is basically in the first page of the book. Mm-hmm. When she leaves the marsh, it doesn't go well for her. And so then she hates her father. When she's 18, she puts all that behind her by reinventing herself. So she, in effect, denies her father. And then by the end of the book, she has to come to terms with who and what she is.
I really enjoyed the aspect of the novel where it's told in flashback. You know, she finds out she's an adult at the beginning of the book, but tells us as her adult life progresses in a very, I don't know how much you want to give away, so let's just say it's stressful circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
She fills in the background, which at first is distant, kind of like the stress is, and as the stress becomes more heightened, so does her story of growing up and finally escaping the swamp.
Yes. And I'm fine with saying, you know, that the present day part of the story involves her having to hunt her father down, because that's known by the end of the first chapter. So it might even say that on the back blurb of the book. I'm not sure. So what has happened, I interweave the past and the present stories, as you mentioned. And in the present, she's a young mother of two little girls. She's living south of Grand Marais. She makes her living making jellies and jams, which is like, I've made jelly. And so her husband doesn't know her history, though, because, as I mentioned, she's reinvented herself to put her past behind her. And then this all comes crashing down when her father, who has been in prison here in Marquette, in the prison for 13 years, he escapes during a prison transfer, and he disappears into the Seney Wildlife Refuge, or so he makes police think. But Helena knows otherwise, because she knows him better than anyone, and she knows he's coming for her.
Mm-hmm.
So the present day part of the story develops into this cat and mouse game, you know, between the hunter and the hunted, and can she find him before he finds her, and so forth. Yeah,
it's almost as though in the story, for her own sake, the father had to escape, because I noticed there were several times where she felt she knew exactly what was going on, only to be proven wrong.
That's right.
Which is what we do so often as teenagers, where we know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the parents correct us, or we experience something, and the parents, whether they say it or not, they go, "Told you so."
Yes.
You know, and so she's got a lot of those, or at least a handful of those moments where she's very smart, but she's still not as smart as he is.
That's
At least for a while.
And the adult Helena, she very much grows over the course of the story, mm-hmm. you know. So as in the beginning of the book, as an adult, she's telling about her childhood, but she's wrong about so many things, and she has to get this all sorted out by the end of the book.
One of the things that struck me was you have such specific details of living off the grid, of things that they were able to do, not just, oh, she learned to hunt and fish, but the cattails in the jam, and the way the mother made the jam, and the way they set traps, and it made me start to wonder, how much of this do you actually know, and how much research did you have to do? Because I felt, if you researched all of this, wow, were you able to tell a story that you hadn't lived at all?
Well, as we've mentioned, I did move to the Upper Peninsula as a young married couple with my husband and our infant daughter, and I have eaten cattail heads and milkweed pods, and I have washed diapers by hand in a bucket, and it's as nasty as you would imagine it would be. So much of the detail I did live. What I did not do is hunt or fish. So I've never touched a gun. So those parts of the book I had to research, because with Helena's family living entirely off the grid, obviously they had to hunt and fish.
Yeah.
So for me, writing the scene where Helena shoots her first deer was very intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in the winter, and I can write her walking across the frozen marsh and imagining the fish and frogs below, and what the air feels like, and the cawing of a crow. I can write all of that. But what it feels like to hold a gun and shoot a deer, that is something I don't have any personal experience with. Right. So I had to watch a lot of really ugly YouTube videos. And I will say this. So a friend of mine, when she found out that I didn't hunt and she was reading early chapters of the book, she had her hunter husband read it and he signed off on it. So that was cool. And then the other thing that was fun was after the book published, I was contacted by a writer. He writes, I call them boy books, you know, military thrillers. Mm-hmm. And he was reading The Marsh King's Daughter, and he told me that he says, I never tell people this, but I've been an avid hunter my whole life. And he said, when I read the scene where Helena was learning how to track and where she shoots her first deer, he said, I knew you were a hunter too.
Oh, that's terrific. Yes,
so,
I was.
yeah, that I didn't disabuse him of, you know,
that
idea. So, yeah, it's so any novelist, you're going to have to research some things. And for me, those were the areas that required research. That, and I in the story, Jacob, Helena's father, is half Ojibwa. And so, obviously, I had to research those parts, too, very carefully and accurately.
And there's also a connection to fairy tales. The Marsh King's Daughter is a Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale. And you even use some of the chapters that with little excerpts from the fairy tale. What's the connection there?
Well, the way The Marsh King's Daughter came to be is I woke up in the night with the first sentences of the book fully formed in my head. So you could say the character just came to me. And the sentences are, if I told you my mother's name, you'd recognize it right away. My mother was famous, though she never wanted to be. Hers wasn't the kind of fame anyone would wish for. J.C. Dugard, Amanda Berry, Elizabeth Smart, that kind of thing, though my mother was none of them. All of that was just there in my head.
Right,
yeah, it's very cool. So I thought to myself, well, all right, this is the daughter of a kidnapped victim and the man who took her. That's very interesting. In the morning, I wrote up a few paragraphs in her voice, basically her telling me a little bit more about who she was, and that's when I gave it the location that I know so well, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. But I still didn't have a story for the character. I didn't know what was going to happen in the book. So that's when I got my childhood book of fairy tales off the shelf, because there are some novels, Awen Ivey's The Snow Child is an example, that offer a modern take of a fairy tale, and I thought perhaps I could do that to find a story for Helena. Well, when I found The Marsh King's Daughter, I was just astonished at how it paralleled this character who had already come to me. Because for those who aren't familiar with the fairy tale, The Marsh King's Daughter is the story of, in the fairy tale, she's the daughter of a beautiful Egyptian princess and the evil Marsh King.
Mm-hmm.
And the character who came to me in the night was the daughter of an innocent girl and the very bad man who took her. In the fairy tale, it takes place in the northern country, in the Viking country. And, you know, I had set the book in northern Michigan, in the swamp or the marsh. So and then the other thing about the fairy tale is, by day, the Marsh King's daughter is beautiful like her mother, but she has her father's wicked, wild temper. And then at night, that flips, and she takes on her mother's gentle nature in the guise of a hideous frog. So the fairy tale is all about the struggle of good and bad within us.
Yeah.
And I used that then to structure the story. So the events of the story roughly parallel the events in the fairy tale. And yes, I include excerpts of the fairy tale too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the title comes from.
And now it appears that this book is taking on a life of its own.
It's been pretty astonishing, everything that's happened for the book.
It's going to become, they're in the works of making a movie out of it already.
It's true. It's true. And not just like a Netflix movie
or a
Hallmark movie, although it would never be a Hallmark movie because the book is a little dark. But a major motion picture with Oscar winning and nominated talent associated with it. So, yeah, it's incredibly exciting.
We'll keep an eye out for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we have a moment? Did you have a passage? You mentioned you might read something from the book. Do you have a short passage you'd like to read?
Well, you know, sometimes when I do a book event in person, I go on to read those next paragraphs after the opening sentences that I just mentioned, where Helene is talking about her mother. She goes on to say, "You'd recognize my mother's name if I told it to you. And then you'd wonder, briefly, because the years when people cared about my mother are long gone, as she is. Where is she now? And didn't she have a daughter while she was missing? And whatever happened to the little girl? I could tell you that I was 12 and my mother 28 when we were recovered from her captor, that I spent those years living in what the papers describe as a rundown farmhouse surrounded by swamp in the middle of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. that while I did learn to read, thanks to a stack of National Geographic magazines from the 1950s and a yellowed edition of the collected poems of Robert Frost, I never went to school, never rode a bicycle, never knew electricity or running water. That the only people I spoke to during those 12 years were my mother and father. That I didn't know we were captives until we were not. I could tell you that my mother passed away 2 years ago, and while the news media covered her death, you probably missed it, because she died during a news cycle heavy with more important stories. I can tell you what the papers did not. She never got over the years of captivity. She wasn't a pretty, articulate, outspoken champion of the cause. There were no book deals for my timid, self-effacing wreck of a mother, no cover of Time. My mother shrank from attention the way arrowroot leaves wither after a frost. But I won't tell you my mother's name, because this isn't her story, it's mine.
That's Karen Dion reading from her book, The Marsh King's Daughter. The event is Book Notes tonight at the Peter White Public Library with John Smolens and Karen Dion. And Karen, you're making a few other stops in the UP over the next couple of days.
I am. Tomorrow morning. when an author tours, they lose track of the day sometimes, or the city. I'm sorry. Yes, tomorrow morning I'll be at 10 o'clock. I'm going to stop at Falling Rock Bookstore in Munising.
Yeah.
And then at 1 o'clock I'll be at the Engadine Public Library. And then at 6 o'clock, I'll be in Sault Ste. Marie at the Island Books and Crafts.
Great. And then Wednesday, you're in St. Ignace, correct?
Right, at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
Before you head home.
At the library.
Wow, yeah. Wonderful. Karen Dion, thank you so much for stopping by today. It's been a terrific chat. The book is wonderful. And I encourage everyone out there listening right now to go to Book Notes tonight with Karen and John. Thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having us.